Well, and you bring up the concept of disgust. I don't recall anybody that I've read who's gone into such detail about a sort of a central place of disgust and how we relate to the world. And I think
that's right. The World of Disgust Studies is a very, very small pond.
Mm-hmm.
My advisor in graduate school, Paul Rosin, was the big fish in that pond. He's done most of the work. And it's from him. He studied food and eating behavior originally.
Mm-hmm.
And most people had ignored disgust. They thought it was, first of all, an unpleasant emotion. But what's fascinated me is, why is it that when you look at the moral codes of so many countries, so many cultures, they write so much about menstruation and food and leprosy and all sorts of things about the body? Why are moral codes so focused on the human body? That was my question in graduate school. So I went to talk to Paul Rosin because it seemed like all these things had something to do with disgust. And that has just fascinated me ever since. And so that comes up in Chapter 9 of the book, where I talk about the emotion of disgust, and then its opposite, which is moral elevation. Disgust turns out to actually be an important emotion in our religious lives.
And a lot of the, you talked about your experience at a, I guess it was a Hindu temple that you studied
right,
for a
India.
Few months. And you really, I think it seemed to really crystallize a lot of your observations about disgust.
Oh, good. I'm glad it did that for you. That was my goal in writing that section was, you know, as a scientist, we tend to speak more abstractly, and I realized I've really got to give some good concrete examples of what
mm-hmm.
it was like. I mean, it was like being on a different planet. It was just the texture of daily life was so different. As some of your listeners may know, Hindus have a lot of concerns about rules of purity and pollution. And you see very similar rules in the Old Testament, the book of Leviticus. But by the time the New Testament comes around, these things tend to kind of disappear. But in India, one has to be very, very careful about what you touch and what order you touch things. You have to be careful that you don't pollute zones of sacredness, that is, temples or kitchens or the rooms where families keep deities. So it's a whole new set of sensitivities that I, as an American, just didn't have. But after spending 3 months there, I actually felt like I picked up a little bit of it and brought it back with me to America.
So you started doing things like taking your shoes off when you came into the house. You got that feeling of maybe disgust or purity or elevation. Also, you brought up elevation, and again, trying to help people understand how it is that scientists think they can say something. Because you hear all this stuff. A scientific study comes out, and then a couple years later, another one comes out with the opposite conclusions. And some people think that scientists are just kind of all making this up. Talking about elevation, I was kind of intrigued by the way that somebody tried to measure elevation and see if it seemed to... To link to oxytocin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. You know, we scientists, we have fads and fashions. Just we're human beings, and so we have fads in science. And so somebody will study a particular topic, and then everybody piles on that topic. And we have tons of research on racism and tons of research on depression. But there are a lot of areas that just nobody ever bothered to look at. That's one of the points of this new field of positive psychology, is that there's so much to human nature that has been ignored. So here I was studying disgust and all these negative moral emotions, and I began to wonder, well, what's the opposite of disgust? What's the emotion we feel when we see somebody do something wonderful or beautiful? And in talking with people about their experiences of moral beauty, their stories were similar enough, and they described feelings in their chest. They described feeling uplifted. They described wanting to do good deeds themselves. I realized, my goodness, this has all the hallmarks of an emotion. So I felt like there was a certain plausibility. I felt as though people recognized this emotion. And I've just been studying this for about the last 5 to 7 years. So far, I have just a little bit of data. The study that you referred to was one in which we wanted to test the idea that there is really a hormonal basis for these feelings. And when you feel these warm, glowing feelings in your chest, I suspect, and I have some evidence, that the vagus nerve is involved, and possibly the hormone oxytocin, which which is sometimes known as the hug drug. It's a hormone that makes mammals cuddle, makes mammal mothers bond to their children. And so a student of mine and I, we brought lactating women into the lab, that is, women who were nursing. It was very hard to measure oxytocin. You need a complicated lab test. So my student was very clever, Jen Silvers. She figured out that if you take women who are already nursing, or lactating, and you show them a moving video, well, if that causes the release of oxytocin, oxytocin causes the release of milk. So half of the women, again, this is an experiment, so half of the women saw an uplifting video from the Oprah Winfrey Show, and half saw a comedy video from Jerry Seinfeld. It felt good, it was fun, but it wasn't morally uplifting. And sure enough, the women who watched the elevating video were more likely to leak milk into a pad, and they were more likely to take their child, because they came in with their infants, they're more likely to actually take their infants and put the infant to their breast and nurse it. So this is not proof, but it's pretty suggestive that there is a real emotion here, which involves a real measurable hormone.
Mm-hmm. And it's certainly a piece of evidence that supports the idea, that makes you want to further try to demonstrate it in other ways.
Exactly. That's right. It's an additive process, and I've taken one step on the road. I hope others will investigate, and if they find opposite results, well, eventually the truth will come out.
So then you wondered, if people are feeling elevated, if they have more oxytocin flowing, is we think of people with elevated feelings as perhaps being charitable, let's say, or wanting to help others, and you
yep.
tried to see, and this is, again, this is also part of how science works. So you thought, well, okay, that they probably will want to help others. Let's see if we can test that hypothesis too.
Yep, that's exactly right. That's exactly the step that I took, because that's what people say. They always say mm-hmm. that. I say, did this feeling make you want to do anything? Oh, yes. Oh, it made me want to help others. Oh, it made me want to be a better person. It made me want to do just what Mother Teresa did, or whatever. So I thought, well, that all makes sense. So I bet that's what it is. Well, I tested that out. I've done 3 experiments where people had the chance to actually help others. And so far, none of them have worked. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not true. But it suggests that it may not be true, and I don't have any evidence for that. So I had to pull back my claims on that. I think, well, maybe it doesn't actually motivate you to go out and do something. But now what I'm thinking, and I'm doing some experiments right now, it makes you more open and receptive and loving. Oxytocin calms you down. Oxytocin makes you bond with those that you love already. It doesn't make you want to go out and run a mile or jump for joy or go fix the world necessarily. So I'm doing an experiment right now where we elevate half the people see an elevating video, half don't, and we see whether they're more trusting. That is, in a game where they have to pass money to a stranger, and then the stranger can either keep it all or we double anything that gets returned. So it's a kind of a game that economists play, where if you trust people, you could be ripped off. And we're trying to see if elevation makes people more trusting.
Mm-hmm. So you tried to prove the hypothesis that oxytocin might cause more charitable or helping kind of action, and instead you came up with a new hypothesis that oxytocin causes bonding, not action.
That's right.
Was your statement.
Right. Yeah, and that's how the scientific method works.
Mm-hmm.
We can't just say, well, I think this is right, therefore it's right. You say, mm-hmm. I think this is right, and you put it to the test, and, half the time or more, you're wrong. So science is always fun. I mean, it's always full of surprises, and that's how you learn.
You're listening to On Your Mind with Steve Franklin. We've got a guest tonight, Dr. Jonathan Haidt, who has written The Happiness Hypothesis, Finding Modern Truth in Ancient Wisdom. And it's just released, so you probably haven't heard a whole lot about it yet, but this is part of what I hope will be a lot of people learning about this book. I'm having a good time talking to Dr. Haidt, but this is a show where if you've got questions or thoughts on this, you can call in too, locally in the 314 area code 454-0400, or if you're listening nationally on WGNU.net, you may want to call in toll-free at 877 920 WGNU. We'll be back with more of Dr. Haight right after these messages.
Why listen to Brand X Radio when you can listen to something brand new? Join the conversation by calling 314-454-0400 or toll-free from outside the local calling area at 1-877-920-WGNU. For those of you who may be alphabetically challenged, that's 1-877-920-9468. Stop rushing around the radio dial. Leave it here and call in and talk on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
Hello, this is Steve Franklin. If you've been listening for a while, you know I'm a psychotherapist. Maybe you even listened to my summer program, On Your Mind. But when you have serious family or mental health issues, you need personal, face-to-face, confidential attention. If you would like more information about my practice and mental health issues and resources, check my website at www.stevefranklinmsw.com. That's stevefranklinmsw.com. Or call me at 314-517-8383. That's 314-51-STEVE.
You can ride with the James Gang. Just saddle up with Dennis James online at WGNU.net.
This is On Your Mind with Steve Franklin. We are talking with Dr. Jonathan Haight, the author of The Happiness Hypothesis, which is published by Basic Books and available many places. I know it's on Amazon because I checked it out before. Now, what you did with your book, I did something in a much smaller capacity. But it reminds me of my effort to do a talk on love that I did for a local group. And I just read everything I could about it and got what was the equivalent of maybe closer to a chapter of what you did. And, you know, when it came down to understanding what it is, I ended up with the conclusion that whatever it is seems to have a lot to do with an experience of connection with people. And I think that's not too far at all off with where you ended up with, you know, with your look into greater wisdoms. Is that fair?
Absolutely. Oh, that is the deepest truth in the entire book, is ultimately it all comes down to connections. The ideas that I got most interested in as I wrote the book, because as it went through chapter after chapter, the idea of connection just kept coming up. And the metaphor that I came up with at the end was that, in a way, we human beings are like bees. You know, bees evolved to live in hives. They can't really live without a hive. Their lives don't make any sense without a hive. And in some ways, we're the same. except that in our modern world, we've kind of created for ourselves such freedoms that we can float around freely. We fly around and try to figure out, well, what should I do now? And we wonder why we're not happy.